All right, it's live radio, folks. So here we go. Take two. Thanks for inviting me into your home, long haul truck, RV, camper, loft, parents' basement, taxi cab, that greasy spoon just off the interstate, and your cabin in the woods. Welcome to Coast AM. My name is Richard Serrett. We're coming to you live from Coast's Toronto affiliate, Talk Radio AM 640. And the Chorus Studios here on the shores of Lake Ontario. It's wet and steamy. And I'm looking out the studio window here onto Lake Ontario, watching the twinkling lights of the cruise ships crisscrossing the lake. There are lots of late-night revelers out on the water enjoying the dog days of August. And here in Toronto, our beloved Blue Jays beat the Astros today. So we're the home team finds itself atop the American League East. And my tomato harvest has been bountiful in our backyard just north of here. So all is right in the world. How about yours? Welcome aboard. We have another great show for you tonight. In the first half of the program, Paul Babcock, another inventor I met this year in Spokane, Washington, which seems to be, there seems to be some kind of a vortex up there that's beckoning inventors and innovators and so-called heretical thinkers. A couple of months ago, you may recall, another Spokane inventor, Aaron Murakami, was on this program to talk about his plasma ignition system. Well, Paul Babcock has developed a motor that operates with magnets. In fact, he says magnets are the only energy we need. He's going to be along very shortly to explain how that all works, why it's so disruptive. And for those of you unfamiliar with the term over-unity, hopefully after tonight's program, you'll have at least a rudimentary understanding of what that means. I hope I will too. And why the concept of over-unity is such a bugaboo for mainstream scientists. How the idea of free energy has become so misunderstood. And why we really need to update our consciousness when it comes to things like thermodynamics and Lenz's law. Paul Babcock and his amazing zero-back EMF motor in the first 2 hours of the program. And he is, as I say, standing by. In the second half, in search of the Congo dinosaur, Dr. William Gibbons is a real-life dinosaur hunter who's made several trips to South Central Africa, Cameroon to be exact, in search of a mysterious elephant-sized creature the local inhabitants, who happen to be pygmies, describe as an immense long-necked creature that resembles, for all the world, an apatosaurus, what we used to call a brontosaurus. Mokele Mbembe is what they call it, and it means, in the local dialect, able to stem the flow of rivers. That should give you an indication as to this creature's size. Dr. Gibbons believes Mokele Mbembe is, in fact, a living dinosaur that somehow managed to survive the Great Extinction event some 60 million years ago. Now, if the idea of actual dinosaurs wandering the Earth 60 million years after they supposedly died off is way beyond the pale for you, consider that there are loads of historical records of such sightings, from the Greek historian Herodotus to Alexander the Great to Marco Polo, and even more. Recorded eyewitness accounts of encounters with creatures we used to call dragons and monsters until 1842, when British paleontologist Richard Owen coined the term dinosaur. Is it possible these enormous lizards still inhabit the remote far-flung corners of our planet? Well, we'll find out in hours 3 and 4 of the program. But first, magnet energy secrets. Paul Babcock has 29 years of experience in industrial electronic applications as a technician, training specialist, service manager, project manager, and applications and design engineer. Paul has worked with public entities and private organizations in fields ranging from avionics, power generation, telephony, and alternative energy. He has broad experience designing and implementing custom communication and electronic systems in both the public and private sectors, and in developing large-scale communication solutions for the oil and gas industry. Paul is recognized for his expertise in alternative energy systems and power generation for companies and individuals, especially in remote locations. Paul Babcock, welcome aboard Coast to Coast AM. How are you?
Hello, Richard. It's an honor to be here.
A pleasure. Now, I was up at your place in Spokane, Washington, and I got a look up close and in person your device, a zero-back EMF motor. Now, we need a bit of a primer here for people like myself who basically has about a grade 9 science education. So let's talk about the idea of magnets generating energy. How is that possible? How can magnets produce energy?
Well, my basic take on it is the standard physics description is wrong, and that of magnetism, and it's not that. And I understand why that is, because back when Lenz was examining motors and generators, he came to the conclusion that a motor is a generator and a generator is a motor, and that it perfectly represented Newton's third law of equal and opposite reaction, which is exactly correct. And then that led into Maxwell's equations, and as the science grew, that is a perfect expression that explains how a standard motor and generator works, and I would never argue with that. Where the argument comes, though, is that you can build devices that don't produce Lenz reactions, and that's where the back EMF issue comes.
Yeah, so, we need to explain what Lenz's law is, and that sort of leads us into what is meant by back EMF.
Right. So if I have two magnetic bodies, you know, and I put them in close proximity together, and I'm using one to push on the other or vice versa, the magnetic fields induce or create opposite and equal currents in each body, and then those currents conflict. And the only way, like in a motor, to overcome those conflicting currents is to add more voltage and more wattage, and how it works out through the Maxwellian equations, physics says that 746 watts of electrical power are required to create 1 horsepower of mechanical power because of these Lenz reactions that buck each other. You have to, it generates anytime you put a force into an object, that object puts a force back against you, and in order to get it to work, you have to increase the power level, and that always turns to where, no matter what, if you have a motor, a standard motor, you're going to pay 746 watts of electrical power to get a horsepower, and that is Newton's third law of equal and opposite reaction. Well, you don't have to do it that way. So if you build a device that doesn't let the magnetic bodies interact that way, you don't get the Lenz reaction. So that's what we call, with our motor, external field interaction. So we interact the fields in a manner that one body becomes invisible to the other. So you have a rotor and a stator. So the rotor is invisible to the stator, but the stator has full effect on the rotor. So as I'm spinning, and as the magnetic fields are pushing on the rotor and making it spin, that same rotor is not inducing any countermotive current into the stator itself. And that means Lenz is gone, and that changes the whole world reality.
All right. First of all, we should point out, Paul, that if people want to take a look at your device, your motor, your zero back EMF motor, we've posted a video up at coasttocoastam.com, and they can see it for themselves.
Yeah, absolutely. And we also, I finally did the talk, and I was able to give full exposure of how it works because we received our patent on it about a year and a half ago. And up until that time, we pretty much kept how it worked under wraps, so we didn't have to deal with patent issues. But now, we're coming out of what we call groundhog mode. We're very confident about our science. We know it works. We've done it for many, many years, and we've proven it thoroughly and completely. And the other half is how we make the electromagnetic side of it, where there's another half that said that electrical physics is very, you know, it's based in equations, and one half and the other half have to be equal. But we found that, and that's all based on these direct proportional and inversely proportional relationships and the formulas that make the basis for electrical physics. But in there, and when I found this years ago, it was a revelation that there's indirect relationships that can be exploited. And how we exploit that is we're able to make very powerful magnetic fields with very little energy.
All right. Now, let's just take a moment, and for those who maybe they're not in front of their computer, just walk us through what this motor looks like. And again, keeping in mind that I'm guessing most listeners have probably, you know, about a grade 9 science education or understanding, which is, you know, basically where I'm at.
So yeah,
let's use real common English terms and describe what this motor looks like.
It's a circular, it's the two pieces, the stationary piece is a circular set of 24 coils, and in the center of that is an armature that's made up of permanent magnets that create, surround the, in space, surround the coils. It's what we call a horseshoe array. It looks like two horseshoes, basically, on the end of each armature that are in space around the 24 circular coils. And then each coil has an electronic switch, as we call it, an electronic device that controls the power and the power to the electromagnets. Each coil is an electromagnet. There's 24 electromagnets in the array.
And this array is spinning around. How many revolutions per minute when it's sort of humming on all cylinders, to use a colloquialism?
It's top RPM is about 380 RPM, but it's a low RPM, very high torque motor. So it's makes about almost a horsepower.
Okay, so
mechanical horsepower.
All right, and it's being powered. I mean, it is plugged into the wall, essentially. I mean, you do have a power source. This is not
absolutely
some, you know, voodoo free energy thing. You do have it powered by an electrical current, correct?
Oh, absolutely. It's, you know, it takes power to make power, I guess, is the way to put that. And so how we do that is, you know, there's a tremendous amount of misunderstanding out there about, there's been lots of years of people talking about over unity and zero point. And there's a lot of confusion about how things really work. And so what we've done is, you know, any physicist will tell you that all from the input power to the output power, it's all a direct relationship. If I change one, I change the other. And what we've created, because we took Lenz reactions out and we figured out how to make real strong electromagnetic fields, which is the other half of the machine with hardly any electrical input, we created what we call an inequality. So there's no direct relationship. It's between the input and output. So I can engineer out my power consumption on the input side, and that leaves the mechanism, and all the 100% of the input power is strictly accountable as heat. So as the laws of thermodynamics say, that I can't create or destroy energy, I can only transform it. And that's exactly what we do on the input. So our input power is completely 100% accountable as heat, and there's no transference of electrical energy to mechanical motion. The mechanical motion strictly comes from the magnetic bodies.
And what is your electrical input in terms of energy? How much electrical input are we talking?
Typically, we actually, in this particular, our very first one, we built some limitations in it. So it takes 1,300 watts of energy we put into the input, but that's 100% accounted for as heat. So the mechanical horsepower is about 477 watts of mechanical horsepower. So if you were to look at it from the, well, you don't have as much out as in, but truly the summation is what counts. In a unity system, all the power would have to add up to the input energy. And with our system, we have 1,300 watts of heat and 477 watts of mechanical output. So the total energy summation is 1,777 watts, 130.8% over the input electrical supply.
And that's what we call over unity. I know you don't like that term, but that's essentially over unity, correct?
That's essentially what you would call the over unity effect.
Because you are getting, when you take the 1,300 watts, which is all accountable as heat, and that heat can be recycled and reused, correct?
Absolutely. It's
plus your 477 watts, which is a little over half a horsepower?
Exactly.
That's mechanical energy.
That's 100% mechanical energy, and that comes from the kinetic mechanical nature of electromagnetic lines of flux.
And this is achievable because you are somehow circumventing what is called Lenz's law, and that is this, can I use the term resistance? Is that another way of describing the back EMF? Is that resistance?
Yeah, it becomes a mechanical resistance. So if I push on, a good way to do that, if you find a good strong magnet and a block of aluminum or copper, and you run that magnet back and forth across that copper or aluminum block, you will feel the resistance.
Right.
Because the magnetic flux from the magnet is inducing currents into the block of copper or aluminum, and those currents have an associated magnetic field, which is always in the opposite direction of the opposing direction of the magnet. So it always opposes. So the magnetism in the other body you've induced is opposing the exerting a force against you. So you have to push and use mechanical force with your hand to get it to move. And
to overcome that resistance.
Configuration that's built right in.
Right. So in other words, you would be using up normally, under Lenz's law, you're using up energy overcoming that back EMF or that resistance.
Exactly correct.
And so you've somehow managed to circumvent Lenz's law.
Exactly. And that's what we call external field interaction.
All right. Now, how long did it take you to, I'm guessing that was that the principal obstacle, figuring out how to overcome Lenz's law? I mean, that's something I'm guessing scientists maintain is carved in stone, right? Lenz's law.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I've had many a intellectual battle, and I generally win, depending on, I mean, some people get mad and march out, but, I haven't had a lot of argument with people that have actually sat down and studied with me. I mean, I've dealt with a lot of very high level academics that they get it, but they won't publicly say it, and I understand why, because reputation and funding are everything to scientists, and you don't go against the priesthood, and that's been one of the problems with progress, but that's changing. I got inspired with the concept in 1988 and did a lot of my own personal research and tried many configurations, and the conclusion I came to, a lot of people, I'm not the first person to say this, and I probably won't be the last, and there was a lot of work done for many years before me by other inventors, but they didn't have the tools that were required to be able to deal and make magnetic fields, because magnetic fields are very powerful and they don't mix that great with electronics and switching systems. You get the flyback energy is very destructive, and a lot of machines had worked for about 2 minutes and they were pretty crude, but they were expressing basically the same thing. So I took my take to it, and I realized that it was going to take some pretty powerful electronics and an electronic system to really bring out.
All right, let me just jump in here, Paul. We'll get to more of that when we come back. Paul Babcock, The Secrets of Magnetic Energy. Here's Groove Me, King Floyd, taking us into the break here on Coast to Coast AM. Stay with us. Welcome back to Coast AM. Richard Serrett coming to you from Coast Toronto affiliate Talk Radio AM 640. Paul Babcock on the line from Spokane, Washington. We're talking about his zero back EMF motor, essentially energy from magnets. And again, if you go to the coasttocoastam.com website, and on one of the featured videos is Paul Babcock's super efficient zero back EMF motor, and you can see it running there. And again, 100% of the input power, which is 1,300 watts, has been accounted for through heat, which can be recovered and recycled. And 100% of the mechanical horsepower, the output, is being generated by the permanent magnets in the rotor. And you can see this thing spinning around, and it's about 380 revolutions per minute when it's sort of humming along here. Now, Paul, this proof of concept that you have, it's quite large. It fits in your garage. And people might notice that the components, you know, the frame is wood, a lot of, you know, the switches and so forth. It's kind of, I think you've described it as sort of 1970s technology because of, you know, funding issues.
Correct.
If you were to use sort of state-of-the-art components, what would the efficiency then be, do you think? Because this is essentially, it's just a design issue, right?
There is absolutely, the only thing between powering the world with magnetism and us right now is simply engineering and material science. What really made it possible to do it the way we did it was when really good switching transistors came along in the mid-90s. And that was the real challenge, was to create the electrical architecture that could handle the electromagnets, because with electromagnets, energizing them is one thing. It's when you de-energize and they generate tremendous amounts of instantaneous wattage, and they just tear transistors and electronics up. And there just wasn't that kind of technology available to take it to the scale I wanted till about mid-1995. And then once I got my hands on those kind of transistors, then I was able to create the electronic systems that could handle the electromagnets. And that's when it really took off. And we were able to do some pretty sophisticated stuff. And right now, we've had, you know, a lot of years of perfecting our switching technology, and we've really advanced it to, I mean, full state-of-the-art microprocessor-controlled stuff. And the next machine, the only thing I have to deal with is coming up with better materials than copper that have low resistance properties. But even with copper, the next machine we build should be about 200 watts of electrical input as heat, and we'll probably double, if not triple, the magnetic coupling forces, and we should be able to go to something like anywhere from 2 to 1 to 6 to 1 input to output.
And that's supposed to be impossible according to the laws of physics, Lenz's law, and so forth.
Yeah, I've been screamed at more than once for making that statement.
When I look at this device, I mean, it looks, you know, pretty innocuous. Why is it so disruptive? Tell me about the potential here for this device and its application. What could this do for the world?
Well, goodbye to nuclear power, goodbye to fossil fuels. I mean, it'll take a while. It won't replace jet engines right away, but as far as your home, your community, it's, you know, we've been for 100 years, there's a lot of history to the electrical age, and the group of us that work together are pretty versed in it, and basically we've been held back. There's hundreds of ways to do this. This is just one. It's what I call, we've turned it into a mathematical concept we call abundant inequality, which means that Mother Nature, it doesn't work in an entropy system, it works in an abundance system. But it's governed. Mother Nature built governors into the system so the universe stays stable and matter doesn't tear itself apart. And so that's why things work the way they do. So basically what we've done here is fooled Mother Nature and in magnetic interactions. And we're able to do that with by being able to switching processes. And then we found the architecture, the mechanical architecture, where we could eliminate Lenz reactions. And then we had the electrical architecture that allowed us to recover and reuse the electricity we took to make magnetic fields. And so how we do it, on one end, we're making stronger and stronger electromagnets with less and less energy. And on the other end, we've eliminated the Lenz reactions, And the better the coupling we get between the rotor and stator, the more foot-pounds of force we get. So it's just engineering the concept.
So this can do work. I mean, it's not just in the demonstration here on the website on coasttocoastam.com. If they look at the zero back EMF motor, it's 380 revolutions per minute. It's spinning around and around and around. But this can be used to do actual work. Correct?
Absolutely. You could, if you want to pump water with it, great. But the concept I have is to put a standard generator on it. Maybe 85% or whatever efficient generator. It puts out power, electrical power, because there is horsepower there to drive it. Then you feed some of that off to the input of the motor, and that leaves you, and the leftover you have to use to power your house, charge your electric car, use what we use electricity for everywhere. And what we really need to do is totally decentralize energy. And the other thing is we all know what Fukushima and the nuclear industry is doing to the planet. We know what fossil fuels are doing to the planet. And really, those are industries that have been protected and sanctioned by people with vested interest, and they've been holding us back. And it's all good for maybe, a few thousand people on the planet, while the other 6 billion have to suffer the consequences. And this is the solution. There's many solutions. I mean, I know inventors, the best scientific work in the world is being done in private labs across America and Canada. And there's just a plethora of inventors out there. I know many of them, and they've been very gracious to let me examine and duplicate their work. And there's just been a tremendous amount of collaboration here in the Northwest. And it's a form of a renaissance that's going on here, and the solutions have been found. The missing piece, as we see it, is the public. We really need the public to catch on to what we're saying, to understand it's true and real science, and to support us and make it happen, because we can't do it without the public. But the solutions are there, and if anybody tells you that no over-unity device has ever been demonstrated or seen, well, that's just nonsense. It's been done for at least 50 years, time and time again. And the thing that's different now than then is we have the technology and tools, the electronics technology, to make it totally practical and cost effective. And there's no reason we can't do it right now.
And this device could be scaled up or down.
Both ways. Correct.
So if it was scaled up, it could be used to provide electricity, for example, for a larger home or even a factory. If it were scaled down, you could use it to power computers, I don't know, refrigeration, that sort of thing. Is that the idea?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And there's many, many, many ways to do it. And you can, there's just literally hundreds of configurations, and across the spectrum of inventors, there's probably, I've seen at least 10 practical approaches to devices of all kinds of different configurations that all essentially do the same thing from different perspectives.
But the idea is that everyone could have one of these in their homes,
absolutely,
one of these zero back EMF motors.
Absolutely nothing preventing that other than public perception and vested interest.
But you still need an energy input, so you still need to draw some electricity.
Yeah, it's just like your car. Once you have a battery to start it, then it will become self-sustaining.
Yeah. All right. Now, when scientists, the mainstream scientists, the physicists, engineers, people with a lot of letters behind their names, come to your place in Spokane and they look at this device, and they do their measurements and their calculations, and they see the input, and then they look at the output. What do they do then when they realize, wait a minute, this is over unity?
They get that far, which a lot of them I've had, and it's not nearly as like it was in the early days when we first started this. We actually have had that machine running since 2003. But it depends on the scientist. I mean, some of them are very open-minded. They get it. I've had many, especially at the energy conference, I've had many a physicist and scientist walk up to me and says, I'll never look at electricity the same. I see absolutely no holes in your argument. I get it. And then other scientists, to even say it, starts this kind of rabid-eyed glaze in their eyes, and the frothing and spitting begins, and, you know, and then they march out of the room, and, you know, I get called a crank and a quack, and that's the end of it. It just depends on who I'm dealing with. But if you're an honest scientist, it's hard to deny the empirical evidence. I am a hardcore empiricist. I've been out there in the industrial science world my whole life, and, you know, I'm a hard analyst when it comes to that stuff, and measuring power and motors. It's been my world for my whole life, so I have the background to deal with it, and I have a lot of people I work with that also have very high level backgrounds. So it's pretty hard to argue with us. It's like Jim Murray and I have been collaborating for about 3 years, and Jim actually has a prototype in his lab that's exactly the same concept as our motor. And, you know, two guys, you know, that never met each other create nearly identical, the same thing, all based on exactly the same principles of eliminating Lenz reactions and recovering and reusing the electricity to make magnetic fields. Just doesn't happen every day, you know. So tremendous collaboration. It's just a fact. It works. And if you're an honest scientist, you admit it. Now, I understand there's a lot of politics in science, and, you know, people's paychecks and their reputations and their funding is dependent on towing the party line. So many, many people have told me they get it, but they would never say it publicly because they weren't up for taking a beating. You know, me, I've got thick skin. You can beat me all day long, and you'll never.
Well, you mentioned that you actually relish these encounters with skeptics.
Oh, I do. I love the intellectual combat. You know, I use exactly the same laws of physics they do. You know, where we differ is what magnetism. You know, I have that Lenz reaction is not that Lenz's law is not immutable. It's true, absolutely, but it doesn't apply universally to all magnetic interactions, so therefore it's not a law. And what magnetism really is unto itself, I have a serious argument there too. And a scientist would tell you that magnetism is absolutely has no energy value. It can be used as a lever. You can use force, but it takes energy on the other end, and it's just a lever, you know, Archimedes, you know, Newton. And
I have a very rudimentary understanding of magnets, Paul, and even I can understand that if you put two opposite poles and you push one magnet towards the other, it's going to repel. Is that not energy?
Well, here's how I explain that. Anything that accelerates, it takes energy to make anything accelerate. You don't get rockets to move without rocket fuel. You don't get cars to go down the road fast without fuel. And the big Newton moment when the apple hit me in the head was I was handing a big, about a 1.5-inch square neodymium magnet back to a friend of mine. And I got it a little too close to the wood stove, and that thing leaped off my hand, accelerated to incredible speeds in about 4 inches, and then smashed itself to pieces against the wood stove and rang it like a bell. A huge burst of expression of energy. And at that moment, I realized that, wow, that was an expression of energy. Now, the trick is to turn that energy into continuous work, and that's what this machine is all about. So I basically base my take on magnetics on Joseph Newman's gyroscopic particle model, and it shows that magnetism can generate mechanical force and accelerate objects. And that is just hard to deny that that's an energy phenomenon. But I've seen many a scientist do experiments that do exactly that and say, well, that's not energy because it defies the law of thermodynamics. And in Newman's model, magnetic lines of force aren't action at a distance. They actually consist of particles that have a continuous motion of spin and orbit. And these particles affect each other. So they lock together like screw threads, or they push against each other like, if you reverse it, you know, the gyroscopic portion clashes, or it couples. And it's a very powerful model. I've used it to model. So everything we did with this machine, we modeled with permanent magnets to find what we call the reaction-free zone. And I find that that model that Newman created is an incredible model for analyzing and creating devices with magnets.
Paul, we're coming up to the top of the hour. We'll take a break. And at the bottom of this next hour, we'll open up the phone lines and take questions and comments. Paul Babcock is here to talk about magnetic energy secrets. And that's the website is magneticenergysecrets.com, magneticenergysecrets.com. We've linked up to Paul's website at coasttocoastam.com. Just click on his name. That'll take you right there. And one of the things I'd like to talk about when we come back is, this is an incredible story you told me, this aha moment you had on a very, very unbelievably cold night when you were up in Alaska in a cabin. And this is how it all sort of came to you like a bolt of lightning. And we'll get into that when we come back. And also the idea that, you know, one of the problems is, in terms of trying to wrap our minds around this, is that there are really two sets of physics, you've pointed out. There are the physics that we learned in school, the physics that, you know, we're supposed to adhere to, but there is another set of physics that are, you know, billions and billions of dollars in black ops budgets being funneled into these projects and programs. We're paying for it, but we don't have access to it. But then along comes Paul Babcock and starts telling tales out of school, and then you find yourself, you know, running up against the man. We'll get to all of that, and then, as I say, questions and comments at the bottom of the hour as well. Paul Babcock, again, the website magneticenergysecrets.com. And physicists have always said magnetism isn't a source of energy. Well, Paul Babcock says they're wrong, and he's the guy who's just one of the guys who's turned this into a practical technology. Once again, you can see the device, his zero-back EMF motor. You can see the video at coasttocoastam.com. My name is Richard Serrett. This is Coast to Coast AM. Please stay a while.